Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Buddha's life and Buddha's teaching were to help people to relieve people of their suffering. And he did it mainly by emphasizing the role of desires in our life and the role that desires play in creating our suffering. And his main point was, don't be overwhelmed. Simple, huh? Don't be overwhelmed by your desires. But more than that, he taught about what attitude we should have towards desires, and he talked about the suffering that is created by them. And he gave many, in his teaching, he gave many examples and offered many parables in the various areas. And here's a simple one, and it's about food. And he said, restrain your many desires while receiving food and drink. Do not accept it based on like or dislike. Be like a bee collecting honey. It tastes the flower, but does not harm its color or its scent. So, of course, logically, we know a bee cannot destroy the color of a flower. It cannot destroy the scent of a flower when it sits on the petal of the flower and drinks the nectar. So, logically, we know that. But the saying, this parable is more than the bee not changing the color of a flower. This saying is about how the bee does not take the honey because the flower is beautiful or because its scent is sweet. That's not why the bee takes the nectar. The bee simply goes from flower to flower without personal preference for a favorite flower. And it's in that way that the bee does not harm the flower. And, of course, does not harm himself. So when the bee comes to a flower, it simply accepts what the flower offers. It does not pick or choose according to its personal desires. And in that way, the bee is taking care of the flower. At the same time, taking care of itself. This is the spirit that the Buddha brought to us, and this is the spirit of our practice. So if we have too much desire for something, we will not be able to taste it and we will not be able to understand it directly, immediately. And when that's true, we will not be able to take care of it. And we will not be able to take care of ourselves. This is the fundamental teaching of the problem of desire. So the flower has nectar or honey in order to invite the bees, who in turn leave their pollen and carry the new pollen on to the next plant. In this way, the plant family will survive, thanks to the bees. So imagine if the bee were to have one single plant as a favorite, and only returns to that one for the nectar. Well, pretty soon the plant will die, and other plants will be neglected, and the bee will not be able to live. But of course, the bee understands something. The bee is not foolish. The bee has no personal preferences for flowers. So all the plants thrive, and the bee thrives. And pretty much in the same way, if we ourselves attach too much to something, we will destroy it, and we will destroy ourselves. So our practice is about accepting, have an attitude of accepting what is offered to us rather than an attitude of taking something. When we are interested in taking, this becomes grasping, and this is about concern for our own self-interest. And when that happens, we cannot appreciate the food that is offered to us, and we cannot appreciate ourselves. With a grasping mind, we can't appreciate our life. But a mind that is accepting of what is offered is a mind of appreciation. A mind that appreciates what is offered by others and what the world offers. When we have a mind like that, there is no desire, and you can be really you, yourself. So the bees, the attitude of the bee is beyond taking, beyond accepting, beyond those kinds of concepts. The bee has no attitude. It just does what it does naturally. It behaves wisely according to its bee experiences. But we humans have attitudes. We humans have attitudes. And we can develop a taking kind of attitude based on personal preferences. Or we can develop an accepting attitude based on non-attachment. So when our mind becomes dualistic and discriminating, we cannot appreciate things as they are. We are always in confusion and we create problems. So our practice is about reflecting on ourself. And reflecting and seeing how we relate to people and to things. Are we careful of what we do and what we say? Are we attentive and accepting of what the world offers? Or do we only take what pleases us and ignore what we don't like and ignore when we are careless? So difficulties, unpleasantness will arise in our life. This is true despite all of our efforts to create a trouble-free world. Very unpleasant things will come up. And it's beyond our control. They will come up. All things change. We may create a situation that is trouble-free, and we try to keep it stable, but it changes, and troubles arise. If we react by complaining about these changes, and if we push away the difficult things, we will create more problems. Children do that. When they're not pleased. I had an experience when I was very young, maybe 5 years old. And I had some playmates. And one day I went to my friend's house for lunch. His mother gave us lunch and she served spinach. Can you imagine serving spinach to a five-year-old? She served spinach or something like that. And my friend was so angry, he picked up the plate of spinach and he threw it across the room. Because he wasn't pleased. That's what little children do. But at some point in our life, we can develop an accepting mind and be grateful for whatever is offered to us. Whether it's spinach or something else. Thank you. So we have to know what we are doing. And we have to know the direction of our life, and if this direction is the one that is right for us and right for this life. And we have to be cautious about basing our life on what is convenient or on what we prefer. I think this is one of the problems of the society these days. So many preferences. So many things to prefer. And if we don't get them, we throw the plate across the room. I think this is a problem. But if we pay attention to ourselves, see our tendencies, we can avoid that difficulty. But if we base on our life on only what we prefer, we pursue our preferences, our ideas and our view of life will become very biased, and our judgments will become one-sided, and we will create problems without understanding what happened. So to accept our world means to observe our world with a mind that is ready to observe without judging. So when we can observe the bee, we will admire its qualities. We have to know, are we like him or are we something else? So the most important part of our practice is to observe ourselves and the various ways we create karma. Suzuki Roshi pointed out in the talk that when we are aware of the difficulties that we create, we can extend our practice into our everyday life. He meant, we can learn from difficulties and learn how we create them so that we can learn how to avoid the traps. And when we learn from our difficulties, we can reorient our mind so that we can be like the bee. To be like the bee means we practice without attaching to any idea of personal preference. So when we keep a mind of practice, when we have a dedicated, determined practice, we will not say, oh, this is too difficult, or this is boring, or this is inconvenient. This is the opposite of mind of practice. Sometimes when life is difficult, and there's so many things to take care of, we may say something like, there are so many problems in life, it feels like I'm swimming upstream. What it means is, we haven't yet learned how to swim. Fish swims in all directions. The fish doesn't know anything about upstream. Doesn't worry about upstream. And when we practice, when our life is based on practice, there is no upstream and there is no downstream. It's just swimming. So we should be like the bee or the fish or the bird. We should express our life in each moment without discrimination and without making a fuss. Our problem is, our human problem is we fuss too much. We're too fussy. So that when some difficulty arises, or something does not please us, we become too interested in using things rather than accepting them and respecting them. We should respect our life like the bee respects the flower, the fish respects the water, and the bird respects the sky. We should respect all things, all people, and most importantly, we should respect ourselves. Let's not shortchange ourselves. Then we can trust our life, and we can trust ourselves completely. And this is the basis of our practice. Does anyone have a question? Yes, Umar.
That's my elder brother is an engineer, lives in Los Altos, has everything that this Silicon Valley could provide him. He's worked for a world-known Silicon Valley company too. But sometimes, actually most of the time when I sit with him, go and see him or sit with him, he does not like people who are darker colored skin than him. And he is also very class-based as to people who make less money than him. He doesn't seem to want to respect those people and puts them down. So, in front of me, and sometimes it is very hard for me to go and sit with somebody who is who has that many preferences. So I feel like I'm sitting right next to the fire, and how the only thing that I can think of doing is being quiet and just breathing in and breathing out. I feel like I'm sitting in meditation. Is there another way for me to deal with something like that?
No, that's right. Sit quietly with him and observe him carefully and see past those behaviors that you feel are troublesome. So these behaviors that you speak about, behaviors of his that you speak about, are due to a kind of some sort of unhappiness? So try to see past them. Try to see who he really is and relate to him . Don't relate to those behaviors, relate to him. The real him. Not just his confusion. So you practice when you're with him, in the midst of those difficulties. Miss Lee?
Isn't it so, though, that our preferences in different things, we have these preferences because they make us feel the filling of some emptiness. I know that there are a lot of people who have preferences in food because they feel that food is being loved, or they confuse the receiving of food with memories of perhaps safety in childhood or something like that. And having things also, I think we tend to confuse with the feelings that we've had in the past when we wanted something and got it, and the feelings that we had when we wanted something and couldn't have it. So could you speak a little bit to that part of preference? Hmm.
That may be true, and may be true most of the time. Our practice is about not allowing ourselves to be held captive by those past experiences. You know, it's not like psychology, where you would analyze and say, oh, I see the source of... You don't have to analyze. You just have to know that there may have been something in our background that's causing us to behave in ways that may not be productive, and we just have to make determination not to be a slave to them. And when the feeling arises that's associated with those old experiences, to put that in the background and to come back to the present moment. And I believe that for most of the things that do trouble us as human beings, we can do that. We can be aware of some tendency to act in ways that satisfy some old longing. But we can learn to recognize it, to say, I'm coming back to the present. You can sit over there. I don't mean this is the practice will resolve all problems. There are some illnesses, mental illnesses, that are beyond that, that need deeper intervention. But for most of the things that trouble us, we can get beyond them by committing ourselves to being aware and not letting them overwhelm us. Thank you. Yes, Scott.
I wonder if you would talk a little bit about preference and the paradox of choice.
Preference?
And the paradox of choice. I find, like, my favorite grocery store is one where there's like two different kinds of each product. And when I go to Costco and there's 17,000 different kinds of toothpaste, that I can spend almost half an hour just trying to develop enough of an opinion to pick a toothpaste. Or in more mundane experience, sometimes after a wonderful day at Canando and I go home on Saturday morning, and I'm confronted with choosing what to do for the rest of the afternoon. And I could do one of a dozen things, and I actually can't make a choice because it feels like I'd be leaving something on the table. So I wonder if you could talk about how maybe sometimes tiebreakers would be helpful if you don't have a preference.
I remember when I was a student in college, learning calculus. And we were taught how you could determine the optimum point of a curve. And I was fascinated. Oh, you can determine the optimum. And for years, I pursued the optimum. It's there. I could get the best, the perfect, the optimum. Until I realized that life is all about saying, this will work. This is good enough. This toothpaste is good. I don't have to go down the hall. This will do. So after many years of pursuit of optimization, I finally realized, that's a hang up on science or something like that. I discovered it didn't make me happier to find the optimum. I was just as happy with, this works. This toothpaste works. Let's go home. So sometimes that's the problem. So if you have a number of possible activities, oh, that's a good one. Why don't we go do that? Without worrying that, oh, this is better. I should have done that. We can be happy with what's in front of us. And not seek for perfection. Just be happy with what we have. That's my own experience.
As I was thinking about the bee, it struck me that the bee might very well have a preference for certain flowers, but then it did, what you said later did strike me that he's probably not held captive by the best flower. And maybe the bee is actually going out the next day, making some different choices based on what was available yesterday. But this idea of not being overwhelmed by choice or preference. So I wonder if that's a way of thinking of this, that choice or preference can be some natural asset at our disposal until it overwhelms us. That it's got a good purpose, but it's the overwhelming part, that the captive part that takes it from tool to something that hurts us.
That's right. I think that's right. So sometimes we're in a situation where we need to make the best choice, and we need to find what is the preferred way to do something. If we have a serious problem that needs the preferred way to do something, then of course, but that's reserved for special times, for special situations. It's our everyday mundane, moment by moment search for preferences that drag us down. Famous story in Zen circles where the teacher says, "Have a cup of tea." The student says, "Thank you." The student doesn't say, "What kind is it?" Thank you. Thank you. Please.
Hey, so I have a question. So preference, on one hand, create desires, create attachment, and create unhappiness. But on the other hand, also create motivation and innovation and progress. So without preference, maybe the whole society or even individual may not make progress. So how do you consider the other side?
Do you think progress is so important?
I guess so. So all this innovation make people's life better, right? So without preference or desires, so a lot of innovation will not happen. So people will still live in the same kind of technology, everything.
I think one of the problems of the modern world is we have a preference for progress at all costs. So the invention and the development of plastic is considered to be a big step forward. But of course now, the huge pollution of plastic in the ocean. Yeah. So if we don't think carefully about progress, some act of progress, we can have a problem. In other words, we have to be careful of preferring progress at the cost of our natural way of life. It's too hard to stop it. It's too hard for somebody to say, "That's a very clever idea. we'd make a lot of progress. But there's a downside. Other people will say, you're fired. You know, we just want the progress. Don't worry about future problems. This is one of our difficulties. So we have to be a little bit cautious about having too much preference for progress. You know, in the medical field, of course, relieve suffering, save lives. But in some areas, maybe we don't need so much progress. I think this problem is beginning to become recognized these days. When people are now talking about how, you know, smartphones are impacting people's lives, and all this is now being studied. So, we always, if our job is to do progress, we always should keep in the back of our mind what is the best thing to do for the long-range benefit of people. It's a big question. It's a very big question. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.